This is Just Talking It Up with Ross and Janet.
Welcome to Just Talking It Up. We're glad you're here with us. I'm Janet. I'm here with my buddy Ross, and we're once again going to try and take a subject apart and either prove it wrong or prove it right. So how are you today, Ross?
I'm doing well. Sometimes the subject takes us apart, but let's see if we can take this one apart.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun.
I need to understand what stand your ground is. And I don't know whether this is a grand overview for me, but this is, you are allowed to stand on your property or where you reside or something, and you can defend yourself if you feel your life is in danger. Is that correct?
That's what I understand. And I think there are a number of states, probably more than half the states in the U.S. that have that law. And evidently it is a state law. Probably tied into some federal statute of some kind, but that's what I understand. And certainly I've heard more about that in the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks than I've heard in the entirety of my life outside of that. So it certainly is one that's getting a lot of discussion, and you can see some points on both sides. Much as I hate to say it, the Zimmerman case evidently hung on the stand your ground law. And from what I understand, his defense attorneys determined that that's where they were going to build their case. They were not going to try to build any case outside of that. They weren't going to try to deal with the racial issue. But certainly it's become a very divided situation. People on one side talking stand your ground, on the other side talking race, and evidently the president tried to change the subject from race to stand your ground because he realized that he had no case to talk about the other. It seems like that Holder came to the decision, I don't think Holder comes to decisions. Probably the president came to the decision that they couldn't file any further case against Zimmerman on the racial issue. So they moved.
Well, you know, first of all, I don't think the president or Holder, either one, have any business talking about a case that takes place in a state. If it's a federal case, then Holder can have an opinion. But it wasn't being tried in a federal court. It was a case in Florida. So he needs to keep his big nose out of it.
Well, once the case is decided, it was adjudicated, and he needs to keep his mouth shut because the court decided what the situation was. But here they're trying to go and get people to voice opinions, opine on this and opine on that, trying to build some sort of emotional case outside of the law.
Right. This is on another subject, but this case reminds me so much of when I'll see people praying for a certain thing. They pray and pray and beg God and believe God and worship, and then all of a sudden their prayer is not answered the way they want it. And they abandon the part about God is good, and they go on to something else and say that this isn't right, it's just not right. And then they'll argue and try and fight to make what they were asking God to do to start with the way they want it. And this is exactly what is happening in this court system. They don't like the outcome. You know, we're going to try it in court. Let's try it in court. Let's give it, you know, a jury of peers and all of this. And so they do, and then they get this answer, and they don't like it. So nothing is ever going to satisfy those that were bringing this about to start with. It's just not. But the stand your ground law, in watching this case, I never heard anybody even bring about that as defense. All I kept hearing about was self-defense. And the evidence that I looked at really pointed to me. I would have done this exact same thing as the jury. I would have looked at it as carefully as I could to make sure I wasn't making a stupid step. And I'd just have to acquit him. I would have to find him not guilty, because he wasn't defending property as much as he was his life. He was defending himself.
Right.
So,
you know, I think I misspoke.
Is that the same as stand your ground?
Well, now I think I misspoke a minute ago. The defense did use self-defense as their defense, not the stand your ground law, because they felt like that was probably a place that they could get trapped. Now, that is my understanding, because I did hear that on TV last night. So I think I misspoke on the racial issue versus stand your ground. But the case was, or from what I hear, and most of what I hear is just was TV and reading and what have you, he did feel that his life was in danger, and therefore he felt he was in, he could do what he did. And I guess the stand your ground, it seems like that on the other side of stand your ground, if you believe, let's say you're the one's armed and the other's not, and the one that's armed, which was in this case, felt that he was in danger. And the question then becomes, how could you feel that you're in danger if you've got a gun and he doesn't? And stand your ground does, some say, and I heard Tacopino say this on, who's a pretty interesting legal guy, but he said that stand your ground gives somebody who has the an overpowering ability the right to go further than he might in that situation and not flee. Now, that the flee versus stand your ground, and if you feel like you're in danger, there's not a there's hardly a statistical way that you can say that someone is telling the truth when they say that they were in danger. So it's a murky situation. There's no doubt that it's murky.
Well, so, did you look at any of the evidence and try to weigh it yourself?
Oh, in this particular Zimmerman case?
Yeah, in the Zimmerman case.
Yeah, I felt that there was no other way that they could vote and vote properly except to acquit him of that charge. And I think
you have some property in Florida.
I do.
If you were in Florida and someone that you knew did not belong in that neighborhood, because you know everybody in your neighborhood, and I know that you do because you're part of the homeowners association, that kind of thing. If let's just say you're on the front lawn of this property and someone that you know does not belong there is coming through and he is looking at windows and maybe checking doorknobs and that kind of thing, what would you do? I'm not saying that in this other case he was checking doorknobs, you know, that right. kind of thing. But if you know that he's looking and kind of looks like he's kind of casing the joint, I don't care what color he is, what would you do?
Well, the first thing I would do, I don't have a carry permit, so I wouldn't have a gun with me. I would call 911 immediately. I would try to make sure that my family was sequestered somewhere and was as safe as possible. I would probably try to check out the situation as best possible. I feel like that my job is to protect my particular home and family, and secondarily then to protect property that's outside of my own. I probably would not go after that individual, not knowing whether they had a gun or not.
Would you follow him?
I would probably follow at some sort of safe distance. I don't know that I would on foot follow that person into a dark place. I don't think I would.
Let's say you follow him. You follow him for a block or two, okay. And you're staying at a safe distance.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, he turns around with a giant attitude. He's known that you're following him. He could sense that. He would kind of peek back and see that you're there. And he turns around with an attitude, and he comes marching towards you saying, what the heck do you want? What do you want from me? Why are you following me? What would you do?
Well, I probably would try to back into a place where I might be safest, because let's say I have no gun, then I would realize that I probably could be in significant danger, because I don't know what the situation is with that individual. If I saw that they had a gun, then I would, and I didn't have one, I would feel like I was in a very tough spot, and I needed to get the heck out of Dodge somehow. And that's where I think that Trayvon Martin should have done something to get away. You talk about who should back down in a stand your ground situation. He's the one without the gun who should have backed away. Now, if he came at Zimmerman and under that situation, I believe that it's easy to see how Zimmerman might have felt that even if he did have a gun, he could be in danger, because all it takes is, you know, one swipe to move the gun to the side or what have you, and then all of a sudden you're in trouble. I've heard people say, don't ever point a gun at anybody unless you are willing to shoot and shoot right. to kill, because they can take that gun away from you and either, you know, pistol whip you or kill you or whatever. So you better figure out exactly what you're going to do before you get involved in a situation like that. So I think it's easy to make a hot-headed response in something like that and put yourself in a position that you wouldn't want to be in.
See, so, all of that sounds reasonable to me, and all of that, I think, is pretty much what happened. I think that why the Zimmerman is being criticized because he didn't back off. He was right where he was supposed to be.
I think what we're learning now is that Trayvon Martin was involved in some thefts, or at least he was found to have had stolen property in his book bag at school, as I understand it. And so he was given a pass, was not prosecuted. They didn't do anything to him, let him off the hook. And that was only one of a number of occasions where it was purported that he was involved in criminal activity. So he was let off, and that then ended up in the situation with Zimmerman. That obviously was not something that could be brought into the trial under our case law.
Well, and even if he was a petty thief, I don't really care. Yes, the boy's dead, and that's the real tragedy. He never should have been shot. I don't think everything just seemed to have happened in the wrong way at the wrong time. But right. In talking about this stand your ground thing, everything that you described when I was asking you sounded completely reasonable, and I really. The person who was in the wrong, now they both made poor decisions, but the one who was ultimately in the wrong was the young boy who was not in his neighborhood, who was feeling threatened. He needed to get out of that neighborhood. If he felt threatened, rather than turning and facing that threat, but I think that just before he was shot, his girlfriend had planted, or his friend, whoever she is, planted in his head, you don't know what this guy wants. This guy may be a rapist. So the last thing he hears is something that may have set off a spark. Oh, great. The guy's a gay rapist.
Yeah.
So he's kind of already on this defensive thing. And so he gets off the phone and he decides to confront this guy. If he's thinking that it's a gay rapist, that may have inflamed him in a way that would really make him angry and want to get, you know, turn this guy on his heels and make him run. Of course, he didn't know that he had a gun. So that he really just should have gotten out of Dodge. You know, he just should have hit the road and gone home.
Yeah.
But he didn't. So the one that was in the right was George Zimmerman, who was just trying to defend his neighborhood. He had seen people wandering through the neighborhood apparently before, and had called the police about it before, and they were still having problems with break-ins and that kind of thing. And I just don't see how this even became such a national case when young black men are shot all day, every day in different cities for way less reasons than this. And they're shot by other black men. So why don't we hear so much outrage about that? If they're going to focus on a case and put it before the national media, why don't they pick a case where someone was genuinely picked on because of skin color or because of the way they walked or something?
Well, I think we know the answer to that. I mean, there is a
Well, it wasn't rhetorical. What's the answer?
Well, if look at Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, that's their business. Their business is to inflame this stuff. I mean, they are professional race baiters. There's no way around that. I mean,
did you see or hear any of the interviews with Dr. Alveda King, who is Dr. Martin Luther King's niece?
I have not seen those.
She is a remarkable lady, and she called them all race baiters also.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what they are, and there's no way around it. I mean, everybody knows exactly what they're doing. When there's a problem, any small problem like that that comes up, you know that Jackson and Sharpton are only a matter of one phone call and one airplane ride away. They will be there, you know, and that's the way they make their money. And so they're going to be all over that. They will not deal with the issue of black-on-black crime. And why are there more blacks in jail than there are whites? Because they commit more crimes. Hey, that's pretty straightforward. There's no doubt about that. So why is it such a big mystery?
Well, are we not allowed to talk about it?
No, we're not allowed to talk about it.
Is it because, are we not allowed to talk about it because we're white?
That's one of the big reasons.
Or because we're to ignore it, period.
Well, we're to find a way to understand what they're talking about and believe what they're saying. And that's, I don't believe that. I think that is the Zimmerman Trayvon deal something that does it have hair on it? Yes, it does. It's got hair on it all over the place. No doubt about it. Should there have been a killing in that situation? No. Probably both of them should have done something slightly differently.
Yeah.
And so, but when it comes right down to it, are you going to put that man in jail for life because he did something that the law says he could do if he did feel like that his life was threatened? And he says he did. There's no reason to believe that that was not the case. Everything points to the fact that the jury came back with the verdict that was sound given the law. Now,
you've
got to go outside of it and bring in emotions before you're able to have a discussion deeper than that.
What do you think the motivation is for those that are trying to drum up all this attention to the stand your ground laws that they're trying to change it? Do you think it all boils down to gun control?
I think that's probably the ultimate thing. If you'll notice, when they talk about stand your ground, they do say that if you didn't have guns involved, then stand your ground might end up in a fist fight, but you wouldn't end up with anybody dead because it all comes down to guns kill people.
Let's put the situation in a church. Let's just say you go to a large metropolitan church. And some bad guys come in there, and there are armed church members who use their weapons to defend their church. And let's say they kill some of the guys that have come into the church and that are trying to harm the congregation in some way. Don't you think that the government would be all over that? As you can't just kill people that come in your church that you don't like.
I'm sure they would. The question is, what were they doing? Did they come in just to be a part of the service and sit down? That's one thing, and they should be they may be asked to leave for certain reasons, but if there became some altercation and they begin to beat up on some of the church members, then I would say that the church members would have the same right as anybody else to protect themselves against bodily harm.
Well, let's say this is a black congregation and it's a white racist who comes in and he has a gun and he's wearing an old Confederate flag shirt and he's a little miffed because somebody ran him off the road and he's just walked into this church and the person that ran him off the road was on their way to church and he's followed him there and he comes into the congregation looking for him and he's angry and he's mad. And let's say one of those black congregation members stands up and puts a bullet in him and stops him.
Well, I think the missing, first off, we're chasing some rabbits here on some hypotheticals, but we'll take this one. If that person who shoots him felt that he or his family was in danger of dying by what that man was doing, and there was and you could prove that, I think he would have the right. If that person said, "Well, I think he's doing some things I don't like for him to be doing," and he's raising Cain, and we need to have church, I don't think he has a right to shoot him in that particular situation, regardless of if he's a white racist. But I think you have to feel that you're in danger of being killed. Now, this is where I think it gets hairy, because you're asking a jury to determine, based on what happened, what a person was thinking at the moment, either what they were thinking or what would other people say who witnessed this, that all the action showed them that this person was definitely in fear of dying. So supporting what that person says. In the Trayvon Zimmerman case, there was no one else. It was the two of them. So only those two people and the Lord really know what the situation was.
He was getting his head slammed into the pavement. And even if he was just bumping his head into the pavement, it still was bumping it hard enough to hurt.
I agree with that. And then that one of the jurors said that was one of the turning points. There were two jurors who were interviewed afterward. One was the alternate, the man, and the other one was jurist number four, I think it was, a lady. And both of them said that the phone call, which the determination was made that it was Zimmerman's voice, and that the cut marks on the back of Zimmerman's head, both of those things had a major impact on their decision.
Well, I don't know. I don't think anybody will ever know. I don't even know that George Zimmerman even remembers clearly what happened. I think when your adrenaline is going that fast and that furious because you're in fear, I think that your mind kind of can see things one way when all it's trying to do is protect you. So it kind of views things as a threat, and it just, you go into overdrive. So I'm not sure what his memory, how accurate they are. I think that given the information that we have and going through all of that, all of the evidence, I think they had no choice. Even if they believe that he did something terribly wrong, I don't think they had any choice except to just declare him not guilty. But I think that he was probably guilty of being foolish. But is that something does that need to come into our court system? Do we need to now have an even lesser offense than
Being stupid?
Yeah. I mean, are we going to start taking people into court for being stupid?
Well, this is
because
it seems like
that's what we're trying to tweak every law to include, even stupid people.
Well, this is where I think the hair gets on this deal, because you can say, as I think they're trying to say to Zimmerman, you shouldn't have been following him. He wasn't doing anything wrong. He was just walking. Maybe he shouldn't have been there, but who's to say he shouldn't have been there? And then when you call 911 and they said, don't follow him, you should have not followed him. So there are some situations where you say, okay, what would I have done? Would I have gone into that dark spot, even though did I go there only because I had a gun and I felt like that I had the upper hand? What if the law told me not to follow? We've got people on their way. Now, he may say, well, okay, you've said that before, but nobody's ever come into this neighborhood to protect us, and I feel like I have to, and I'm one of the ones who've been charged with my neighbors and my family of helping protect our property, so I feel like I need to go the next step. So you see the hair that gets on something when you have those kinds of situations that are involved. And you know, we are never going to know fully what somebody is thinking at that time. You know, I think we could talk about it till the cows come home, and we would end up saying, you know, it really was a tragedy. It's too bad that George Zimmerman had to go through this. It's too bad that Trayvon is dead. It's too bad that the law didn't deal with Trayvon before they did, and they should have held him accountable for some of the, or at least charged him with some of the things that he evidently, or they could have charged him with. Okay, this is the alleged. He allegedly stole stuff. He had stolen property in his backpack. So they should have charged him, and maybe he would have been alive today had that been the case. So it's got hair all over it. We're never going to know fully. I think the court system worked in this case, and I think that he should have been found not guilty. Now you put a period to that. Go ahead.
Why don't we have Eric Holder or the president saying the court system? This is how our jury system works, and it worked. It did its job. It's done.
Well, I would say that we don't have the president or Eric Holder doing that. I would simply give you two other names. I would say, what about Al Sharpton and what about Jesse Jackson? Because those two people are doing the same thing. I think Holder and Obama are doing the same thing that Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are doing. They just happen to be at the head of our government. And I think that probably truth and justice and all these things maybe
you know
it
what
is
this,
coming to the government.
The way you just
point.
The way you just said it with Eric Holder, Barack Obama, Jesse Jackson, and Al Sharpton, those are four outspoken black men.
Yeah.
I wonder if this presidency is actually going to turn back the clock on racism in America. I wonder if it is going to be a rallying cry for racists wherever they are. I don't really know any racists, but if they look at this and say, "See, we tried their way. See what they do? They lie, they cheat, they fight for their own, and that's all."
Very possible that that's the case, because I think that there's greater polarization today than there was 12 months ago, 4 years ago. And I think that that's part of it. I think there's some differences today. The differences would be the demographic profile, because you have more and more people, quote, of color. You have more Hispanics. You have more who feel oppressed and put down and what have you. So the question becomes, is this cleavage or this polarization going to pit these groups against each other, and are they going to be vocal? So I don't know the answer to it, but I think certainly that the risk of that happening is certainly greater than it has been in a long time.
I wonder what I don't know. I'm just going to guess. I'm going to pull a number out of the air. Is the population of the United States? I know that we're a melting pot, but as it comes to black population and white population, is it about 20% to 80%, or 20% to 70%, and then 10% is everything else, or?
I don't know the answer.
You have a good handle on that?
I don't.
We need to.
I really don't.
Well, I'm just guessing. So I think
that what you're seeing probably is the black culture being more active politically, and you're seeing, I think, white culture. There have been a number of people who have said, I agree with the black population. They have been aggrieved, and therefore I'm going to do whatever. Go back to Kennedy. When Kennedy was elected, Kennedy was the first Catholic ever elected president of the United States. And I know that at that time, there were a lot of people who were non-Catholic who said, I'm not going to let the fact that he's Catholic keep me from voting for him. And therefore, I believe, and I don't know any statistics on this, that there were a number of people who voted for him for president who only did that because they said, I'm not going to let that keep me from voting for him. If he had been Protestant, they possibly would not have voted for him, but they said, I'm not going to let that keep me. I think that happened when Obama was elected. I think Obama was such a talker. He was up against somebody who would not fight in the last days of the election. And he won not only because of the black population coming out, but a lot of other people who voted for him that said, okay, I'm going to give him a chance. They've been aggrieved, whatever. And they made that vote. Now, I believe that any thinking person could look at what's happened to our country and look at and have to at least question his ability to do what he's doing. Here is a man who was not prepared for the job that he's in. He never did anything. If you go back and listen to what Mrs. Clinton said, she said, I have a long record of doing such and such, and Obama has a speech he made in August of 2007 or 2004. I can't remember, three. I think that's when he made that speech before the Democratic convention. And that's the case. That's exactly what it is. He really doesn't understand the situations that he's in my opinion.
Well, I think it's going to be interesting to see how history interprets his attitude and his ability and his. It's going to be interesting to see.
Well, I just hope I'm around to figure it out.
Me too. Well, I hope our audience is around to figure it out next week. So. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of the summer and come back again next week.
Wait a minute. What did we decide on this thing? I'm not sure. Are we still hanging around up in that tree? I still want to talk about this. Maybe we better talk about it next time.
You know,
you didn't beat me up. Stand your ground.
There's nothing to beat you up over. I guess. So, listen, we'll try and take another subject apart next week. We've got some other special guests lined up coming up for the weeks to come, and we hope that you will tune in and give us a listen. And if you would, go to our website, our producer's website, bigbrainsmedia.com. And if you don't like our show, that's good. Come and tell us that you don't like it, and go try some of the other shows that you do like, because there's bound to be something there that you like. And I want to thank J.P. Spann, our producer, who gets us on every week. And Ross, I couldn't do this without you, so I want to thank you, too.
Hey, great to be with you. Always is. I enjoy talking with you on the air, off the air, any other time. We've just had a great time over the last 4 or 5 years, and I hope we can go another. I hope I can go another 5 years.
Well, yes. I hope our audience goes another 5 years. So come on back, folks. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.